We are facing a multitude of man-made environmental crises, and increasingly, environmental activists are coming from and turning to a surprising place: church. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'll talk with Sister Mary Beth Ingham, Professor Emerita of Loyola Marymount University of L.A. When Pope Francis took his name in honor of the patron saint of the environment, he stirred up a lot of curiosity. Who was St. Francis of Assisi, and what does it mean to be Franciscan? Today, we'll talk about environmental action in the Franciscan tradition, and we want to hear about environmental activism in your church. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. For most of us, the name St. Francis of Assisi conjures up images of a man in robes surrounded by animals. In the Catholic tradition, St. Francis is the patron saint of animals and the environment. And when Pope Francis took his name in honor of St. Francis, a lot of people became curious about St. Francis and what that choice signifies. Sister Mary Beth Ingham is a professor emerita of Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles. She'll be speaking at Iowa State University tonight at 7 o'clock in the sunroom of the Memorial Union. And tonight, she'll be talking about environmental action in the Franciscan tradition. That's also what we'll be talking about this hour. Hello, Sister Mary.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
This hour, we also want to hear from you. Does the environment play an important role in the teachings of your church? Do you have an environmental action group at your church? Please join the conversation. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can also give us a call at 866-780-9100 or tweet us at IPRTalk. And Sister Mary, let's start with a little bit of basic education. Who was St. Francis of Assisi?
Well, St. Francis of Assisi was a layman. He was never ordained. He was never a priest. And it was in the early 13th century, late 12th, early 13th century. He lived in Italy, obviously. He was a young man from Assisi. Actually lived quite a wild life before his moment of conversion. The very famous story of his conversion, of course, is where he stripped himself of all of his luxurious clothing. His father was a trader in clothing. Left everything at the home of his father and walked out of town absolutely naked. Went to pray in a church where he had an experience of Jesus on the cross. It's the well-known San Damiano cross, which you see in many, many Franciscan churches, where Francis experienced Jesus saying to him, "Francis, rebuild my church." So what Francis did is he started to rebuild this very small and dilapidated church until he realized that his vocation was something quite bigger and quite more fascinating, and that was to renew the Roman Catholic Church, which at that time was filled with wealth and at the highest levels, and there were many, many poor people. There was a growing middle class, and Francis began to live a life of simplicity and poverty, giving over everything to the poor, and he founded the Franciscans, which is called the Order of Friars Minor, that is the Little Brothers, who are meant to serve and particularly serve the poor and the outcast and the downtrodden. He was quickly followed by Claire of Assisi, who was also a woman of Assisi at that time who admired him very much. She founded the Poor Clares, another Franciscan order. And since that time, there have been many, many Franciscan orders founded, many in the United States, apostolic Franciscan orders, one in Dubuque, Iowa, in fact.
What is his association with animals? Where does that come from?
Well, there's famous stories about Francis where he preached to the birds. Perhaps some of the listeners have seen that beautiful Giotto fresco. And there's another story told, not sure if it's apocryphal or not, about the Wolf of Gubbio, who was a pretty wild wolf that Francis managed to tame. So there are these small stories about Francis and his love for animals and his love for nature. But probably the most famous source for all of that is his very well-known Canticle of Creatures, sometimes called the Canticle of the Sun, where he talks about brother sun, sister moon, brother earth, sister water. All animals and plants are his kin, his family. And so he really took seriously that if we are children of a loving God, then all creation is children of a loving God, and therefore we are all brothers and sisters.
So, of course, Franciscan orders, as you just mentioned, are still very much with us today. What role does the environment play in the belief systems of these orders?
The environment is an extremely important part of the Franciscan order. In fact, they have a movement, certainly a global movement, for justice, peace, and the integrity of creation. So their commitment to environment and environmental justice has been longstanding. In fact, I believe you mentioned, but in 1979, Pope John Paul II named St. Francis the patron of environment, ecology, and environmental issues. So the Franciscans have always been at the forefront with both their love of nature and their recognition of the beauty of nature and how we come to know God through the beauty of the world around us.
You have drawn a great deal on the writings and teachings of a medieval scholar, John Duns Scotus, about St. Francis of Assisi. What can we learn from his work that is relevant to us today?
Well, one of the things I think we can learn from the writings of Scotus has to do with the deep integrity in all that exists. Scotus is famous for inventing this word, hexaity, and it refers to the uniqueness of each individual, each creature, each being, not just persons, not just humans, but each creature, each being has a singular quality of giftedness that's given to it by God. And Scotus calls this the individual's hake, the thisness. So just as we know and think about snowflakes and realize that no two snowflakes are alike, that's one I have such difficulty imagining, no two snowflakes are alike, so too no two creatures are exactly alike. Each one is crafted by the hand of the divine artist, the loving artist, who paints beauty in everything that exists. So I think a fundamental learning from Scotus has to do with the deep integrity of the created order and the deep integrity of the human person.
Let's go back to 1979,
okay,
when you were talking about the fact that St. Francis was then named the patron saint of ecology and the environment. At that point in time, was there a movement within the Catholic Church to make this a priority, an important part of the teachings of the Catholic Church?
Well, I think the order of what's called the order of nature, the order of creation, has always been important in the Catholic Church. And there's always been a kind of fundamental insight, to put it this way, that God has, in fact, written two books. It's metaphorically speaking, God has written two books. There's the book of Revelation, which is the scriptures, the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament, and then the book of nature, the world around us, the world that communicates to us by its patterns, by its living, by its fruition, the patterns of nature, the death and birth, rebirth in spring. These are also books, as it were, written by God, who speak a language that we don't speak, and we have to pay attention to them in order to learn what they're really saying to us.
There are, speaking of creation, and there are many people who feel that if you look at the Bible, the fact that God granted man dominion over fish, fowl, and all creatures, and certainly made man the stewards of the earth, but people also take that as license, saying, you know, humans are the most important creatures on the face of the earth, and there has been a lot of environmental damage done in that name. How do you resolve that?
Well, I think one way to resolve it is to take a look at the words that have been translated from the Hebrew Bible, dominion and stewards of the earth. There's another way of looking at the Hebrew word that is used there, and it's to be servants of the earth, to nurture the earth, to pay attention to what's going on in nature. So our vocation as humans is to pay attention and to nurture the life around us. So yes, you're right. There's been a great deal of abuse there in terms of using nature or seeing nature as a machine that can be manipulated. But if in fact we discover in nature the deep wonder and the deep reality of beauty that nature is expressing to us, we discover, and spiritually I think we can discover, a much deeper vocation, and it's the vocation of being a servant. So we're not just here to serve one another, we're also here to serve the good of the earth and the future of the earth, which ultimately will be our good as well.
What does it mean that Pope Francis took his name from St. Francis?
Well, it's a very powerful symbol. No pope has ever taken the name Francis. So, many people say, you know, Peter, Jesus, and Francis were the three names that no pope ever took. And that's, I think, because of the enormous symbolism of and power of Francis of Assisi. The story is told that as the election was going on in the Vatican, a cardinal sitting next to who is now Pope Francis turned to him and said, as it was becoming clear he would be elected, turned to him and said, "Don't forget the poor." And Francis, Pope Francis, has said that those words evoked in him a response that was, "Here is the patron for his papacy." And I think he's showing in his love for the outcast, in the beautiful photographs that are taken where he's hugging the leper or hugging the deformed person, reaching out, where they've got that beautiful photograph of these two doves that are on his shoulder and he tries to shoo them away and they just stay there. These are just remarkable, iconic images for everyone around the world. And spiritual leaders around the world are so incredibly impressed with the man who has become Pope Francis and his deep simplicity, the fact that he is not living in the papal apartments, but he is living in the Casa Santa Marta, which is a place for guests and residents, so he's able to be around people, the way in which he wants the church to be a church for the poor and a church for the world. It's a beautiful message, and he's incarnating it beautifully.
Is there a difficulty in the Franciscan tradition of balancing the need for social justice with the need for care for the environment?
I don't really think so. I'm not a Franciscan, but my experience of the Franciscans is it's the same cloth. It's a single cloth, and that's love for the world, love for the integrity of all in the world, promoting human dignity, and caring for the environment. They go hand in hand. Human ecology and human economy go hand in hand.
We're going to take a short break. I'll be back in just a moment. My guest is Sister Mary Beth Ingham. She is Professor Emerita of Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles. She'll be speaking tonight at Iowa State University at 7 o'clock in the Sunroom of the Memorial Union. It's a lecture that's open to the public, and she'll be talking about beauty, abundance, and environmental action in the Franciscan tradition. We also want to hear from you this hour. Does the environment play an important role in the teachings of your church, Catholic or not? We'll talk about all churches this hour. Do you have an environmental action group at your church? What have you done? What do you hope to accomplish? Give us a call, 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest is Sister Mary Beth Ingham. She's Professor Emerita of Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles. She'll be speaking tonight at Iowa State University in the Memorial Union at 7 o'clock, and she'll be talking about beauty, abundance, and environmental action in the Franciscan tradition. And you're welcome to join our conversation this hour. You don't have to be a part of the Catholic Church to join this conversation. We want to know if the environment and environmental action plays an important role in the teachings of your church. Do you have an environmental action group at your church? What are your goals? What have you done? Give us a call, 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we have Craig on the line now from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Craig.
Hi. Speaking of the environment, there's one thing that people, past, present, and future, have in common, and that's what it says in the first chapter of Romans, that people are without excuse if by no other means they should know God, the Creator, who is also mentioned in the Declaration of Independence. They should know Him by His creation. And so part of His creation is the earth, the environment, and to know him makes people accountable to him, and so we should take care of what he created, trying to communicate that he wants to have a relationship with us, that he loves us, and that he just wants to communicate with us through his creation about his awesomeness.
Well, Craig, that's a wonderful point that you raise. And Sister Mary, that echoes what you were saying just a few minutes ago.
Yes, it does. And I think, Craig, what you're pointing to is this whole notion of gratuity, that creation is a gift, that everything is a gift, and that we are now responsible to respond to a gift, both by caring for one another, caring for creation, and also being grateful. So it really, you're touching on a whole spiritual attitude, which is sometimes called the attitude of gratitude. But it's not just about singing praises. It's also about action. And the actions of caring for the environment are the most concrete ways that today we can give praise to God.
And Sister Mary, is this a message that you have tried to communicate to many other Catholics? Because obviously, there's the fundamental message that Craig was just talking about, but your next step, taking that into an active phase, that's something that is not necessarily something that everybody believes they need to be doing.
Well, I think the first step is always a step of recognition, but the natural second step is one of what can I do? And in some ways, that's, if you look back at the life of Francis of Assisi, after he had his experience, he prayed, Lord, what do you want me to do? And I think if we have that openness, we'll see very quickly in our lives different ways that we can take action. So I'm not sure it's as foreign as we might think, that people do see that there is something that they can do. The key, of course, is discovering what it is and how is it that I can act, particularly today in a global reality that is so complex, it's often difficult for us to see what in fact is the one right thing to do. I believe the one right thing to do is to look to myself and to ask myself, what am I consuming that I don't need to be consuming? How can I reduce my use of the resources of the world? What are the ways in which I can give birth to beauty around me?
We have an email question from Morgan, and she says, my question is regarding family planning and how that plays into our environmental impact across the world. How does the church reconcile these two issues when they're so intertwined and conflicting?
Well, that's a very difficult question, and I think in the past, many people, not just the church, but many people have looked upon the climate needs or the global needs in terms of reducing population. That was 20 years ago, 25 years ago, that was the approach really that was seen to be the solution. If we could just reduce population, then things would work themselves out. I think what we're discovering today is that there's another more personal challenge, and that is reducing consumption. Because I don't know how many of the listeners or even you yourself, Charity, have gone online and taken the online exercise of how many worlds would it take to support me? I took that several years ago. I was surprised to discover that it would take 5 Earths to support the consumption that I am practicing if everybody in the world lived at the standard I live. That was a very sobering moment for me to recognize that it would take 5 worlds to support me or 5 Earths to support me. And I think the question becomes more about at what level are we going to continue to use the resources of the Earth, particularly those of us who live in the so-called first world industrialized nations where we're less than 20% of the global population, and we're consuming probably 80% plus of the resources of the earth. So it's really a matter of justice. It comes back to your question of social justice. It's really a matter of justice. What do we need? What do we want? How much does it take for us to live appropriately in a human way? And how can we help other people live humanly as well?
Was that a turning point for you, taking that quiz
online? It was really a turning point because I thought I was living rather abstemiously. I was confident that perhaps I'd need one Earth or maybe two max. And when the number came up five, I was ashamed of myself.
Have you made a lot of changes based on that?
I have. I now only I combine all my trips when I have to take the car. So that I'm not constantly getting in my car driving around. I, you know, make larger circles and sweep around. For years, I have not eaten beef. And now, more and more, in my community, we're moving more toward meatless meals more than once a week. So there are different ways. Obviously, reduce the amount of water. I come from California, so we're experiencing quite a drought, and we have to reduce our water consumption. But even if we didn't have to reduce our consumption of the goods of the earth, I think the Franciscan tradition would say we should be mindful of our consumption of the goods of the earth, because not everyone has the access to resources that we have. And to be mindful of the poor, as Pope Francis calls us, is a challenge for all of us, Catholics and all believers and non-believers.
A lot of people who care a lot about the environment and make changes in their own lives have this overwhelming sense of frustration and hopelessness because you planning your car trips better or me making sure that I recycle all of my yogurt containers. Mm-hmm. You know, these steps are important, but it feels like such a drop in the bucket. How do you, in taking these steps yourself, does that give you hope for the rest of the world? Or how do you conceptualize that?
Well, the way I conceptualize it, I think, is really the way all spiritual traditions conceptualize the smallest step. What's that beautiful line, the longest journey begins with just one step. So it is hanging on to the hope of one action, one action, one action, now one more, now one more, now one more. With Pope Francis, we've seen the power of one individual and what one individual can do and how they can be an example for others. So I think it is a spiritual practice of focusing on today, focusing on the one thing I can do today or two things or three things I can do today, and having a sense of hope that these actions are not futile and they're not too small to make a difference. Because if I truly believed that, I wouldn't do anything at all.
I'm talking today with Sister Mary Beth Ingham. She's Professor Emerita of Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles. She'll be giving a talk tonight in Ames entitled Beauty, Abundance, and Environmental Action in the Franciscan Tradition. And you're welcome to join our conversation as well. Let us know what environmental teachings play a role in your church, or if you're part of an environmental action group that's affiliated with your church, let us know. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Kim is on next from the Quad Cities. Hi, Kim.
Well, and happy Monday, and sending big hugs. I am myself, I'm not Catholic or of a religious affiliation, but when Pope Francis was put into place and his teachings, I was just tickled. I mean, you get a warm, fuzzy feeling from this man. It's just wonderful. And then to hear you talk about, you know, the idea of us finally actually stepping up and being servants and not, you know, and, oh, yeah, big hugs. And because we can get away from petroleum. I mean, we were taught there's so many things that go into it. And to me, GMO and Roundup Ready, you know, if people want to play God, they need to be kind, compassionate, forgiving. But, I love to hear that people are, you know, to put things together, like you said, not just to be good, but to make a difference.
Well, Kim, thank you so much for your call. And Sister Mary, I think, for a lot of people, there is this step between a sort of a basic belief and a feeling that we should be doing something to protect the environment, and the next step, which is actually making a personal change and trying to affect change within your community.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And it just takes one person. It just takes one small action that gives me confidence, and then I'll do something bigger next time.
Mark is on the line next, driving on the highway right now. Hello, Mark.
Oh, hi, Charity. How are you?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I'm a pastor in the United Church of Christ, and last year our denomination gave over 1 million hours to environmental service, and this ranged everywhere from roadside trash pickup to greening in urban areas. There's a church in Cedar Rapids I know that has opened up part of its property to a community garden. The church that I served at that time sent a youth group to Southern Indiana to clean up tornado damage and to help build homes for those people who were displaced from their homes. Our denomination has a long, long tradition of not only pronouncing about environmental action, but also about action in that way. And we're not a large denomination, but we are one of the forefront leaders of mainline Protestant denominations who are making an impact and saying things about how we need to care for God's earth, because God has given it to us as a legacy, and we need to give it back to God in better shape than we found it. And that's, as I drive through here in northeastern Iowa, I can see a lot of things, trash on the roadside. I can see things that just is not happening.
Mark, was there a moment for you when you realized that you needed to take teachings and put them into action as far as the environment was concerned?
Well, when I was in college, I was a member of a college group called STOP, Students to Terminate Overpopulation and Pollution. And since that time, I have tried to be environmentally conscious with everything. For the last 40 years, my wife and I have been recycling. We have been driving smaller cars, or we've been keeping our cars longer so that footprint gets a little bit smaller by the fact that we're not using resources every 2 or 3 years to buy a car. But right now, our oldest car is going on 10 years old. Oh. And it's running just fine. It gets us where we need to go. I'm personally trying to do that. And I'm also I try and encourage congregations that I serve to take that into consideration, too. The church of which I'm a member now has recycling. They do not use plastic or.
Oh, Mark, I'm so sorry your phone's starting to break up, but thank you so much for sharing your experiences with us today. And Sister Mary, do you want to respond to that?
Yes, I would like to say thank you, Mark. What a wonderful example, and how powerful it is as an example that no initiative is too small, and the power of small groups, small congregations, small churches to really mobilize people. It just takes one person to get it organized, and great things can happen. I think, too, something that Mark's discussion lays open is the way in which in our American culture today, and probably first world cultures today, we're really defined as consumers. And that's how marketing looks at us, as how much we can consume. The creation of products now that have a limited shelf life, so that you are going to you'll have to get the next upgrade of the phone, or you'll have to get the next refrigerator because your refrigerator only has a life of a couple of years. If we see ourselves as consumers only, then it's always about what we can gain, what we can gain, what we can get, what we can shop for, how we can go out and get more, hoard more, versus seeing ourselves as citizens. It's a very different way of looking at our own citizenship, that we are here as individuals, but we're part of a larger community, and we're part of a larger civic community, certainly, but also a larger human community and global community. So it involves a shift in the way we think about ourselves, and I think when we begin to think about ourselves differently, then the actions follow.
Before we get to the break, I want to take one more caller. Bill is on the line in Sac City. Hi, Bill.
Oh, hi, Charity, and thank you for taking my call, and thank you to Sister Mary as well.
Hi, Bill.
We have just about a minute before we go to the break, Bill. What would you like to talk about?
Okay. The late Dr. Norman Borlaug won the Nobel Peace Prize, and in his acceptance speech, he stated that solving the world's hunger problem is twofold: increase food production, B, or number two, control human population growth. and it is the unfettered growth of our population that has created many of the environmental problems that we face. And it seems like the church's teachings on birth control and abortion seem to be counterproductive to those efforts to improve our environment. So until now, it seems like the church is part of the problem, not part of the solution. I'd just like to ask Sister if she thinks it could be a matter of consumption reduction and also a population control approach, that it should be a twofold approach to this problem that we face in the world.
Bill, thank you so much for your call. And Sister Mary, can you respond to that briefly?
In this way, that what social scientists have found over the decades is, as a culture or a population, in fact, rises on the social and economic scale, population growth diminishes. And that where there is dire poverty, that's where you're going to see a lot of large families. As families come up the social scale, the economic scale, population will take care of itself.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Sister Mary Beth Ingham. She's Professor Emerita of Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles. She'll be giving a talk tonight called Beauty, Abundance, and Environmental Action in the Franciscan Tradition at Iowa State University in the sunroom of the Memorial Union. That lecture is free and open to the public. We'd also love to hear from you this hour. Are environmental teachings an important part of the teachings of your church? Do you have an environmental action group that's part of your church? Let us know. 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about environmental teachings in the church and environmental action associated with churches as well. My guest is Sister Mary Beth Ingham. She's Professor Emerita of Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles. She'll be giving a talk tonight entitled Beauty, Abundance, and Environmental Action in the Franciscan Tradition. That's in the sunroom of the Memorial Union on the Iowa State University campus at 7 o'clock this evening. But of course, we're not just talking about environmental teachings and tradition in the Catholic Church. We also want to hear from you. Let us know about the teachings at your church or environmental action associated with your church. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We have this email from Kay. Our church, First Unitarian Church of Des Moines, has had an environmental action group for more than a decade, beginning with church-wide use of recyclable products, paper, and plastic recycling, use of fair trade coffee, used for social events and so forth. It has grown exponentially with actions and events too numerous to mention. Our most recent event has brought us near to our goal of $5,000 raised for scholarships for students at DMAC in the wind energy program. So thank you very much for sharing that with us, Kay, and we'd love to hear from you as well. And Sister Mary, I want to go back to what Bill was talking about just before the break, and you had mentioned, he was talking about possible conflict between the church's beliefs about population or birth control and the environmental impact of an ever-growing population on Earth. And you were talking about the investment in the poor, because that makes a big difference as far as population growth goes. Recently, I had a guest on the program whose name is Alan Weissman. He's the author of the book Countdown, Our Last Best Hope for a Future on Earth. And one of the points that he made was that he believes that the education of women is one of the most powerful things that we can invest in as far as environmental impact. Is that something you've given thought to?
Not really, but I certainly would agree. But I think it would be the education of everyone can have an impact on the way we treat the earth and the way we treat one another. So I would certainly agree, but I would extend it beyond women.
Let's go back to the phones. Judy is on the line in Dubuque. Hello, Judy.
Hello.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Well, I'm coming in a little late on this whole conversation, but I've just received two calls regarding my calling about our Church of the Resurrection here in Dubuque. We, for 11 years, the Unitarians have been doing it for 12. We've been doing it for 11 years. We've had an environmental stewardship committee, and we call ourselves the Green Teamers. And we have had so many things, as your callers have said, but I think our centerpieces are our annual Green Festival that we have, which has about 3,000 guests that come from all over. And we compost everything. We recycle everything to the point of 4,000 pounds last year that were deferred from the landfill and went to the compost center or the recycling center. And another big centerpiece is that we have a Green Vision School. They were our inspiration to make the church also green. And also we've put in, this is the fifth year for our rain garden, which is a demonstration of perennial plants that come up, don't need water. And the city of Dubuque has helped us through all of this. But the reason I'm calling today is because this is the season of Lent. And for the second year, we have asked parishioners to give up plastic shopping bags for Lent. It has gone like gangbusters. It has become a little viral, actually. And in order to encourage that, we are selling 800 cloth bags for people to take to the grocery store, Target, or wherever they go, and they are imprinted with our church logo. To culminate all this on Earth Day, we're going to have an Earth Day celebration where we show the movie, the documentary Bag It, Is Your Life Too Plastic? So we're opening this up to the city. We hope that 200 or 300 people come to see the movie that is both serious and very, very funny. So we're really proud of what our church has done and has made waves in the community and in the city because the city has helped us so much.
Well, and Judy, since you mentioned getting two phone calls from people who probably told you, you have to call this show right now, I'm guessing that you are one of the driving forces behind this movement.
Yeah. I'm called the Green Queen, the Queen of Green. I'm seeking younger people to take it over, but so far, I love it, and it's my passion since childhood. So,
well, and if I could just comment, Your Majesty, thank you so much for calling in. This is a perfect example of the way in which different churches and different spiritual groups are leading the way. And the whole notion of replacing small things like plastic shopping bags with cloth bags in California, as you know, that you can no longer, you have to pay if you are using plastic, and you have to bring your own cloth bag when you go shopping, and it's taken off like gangbusters. These are some of these very simple, very small actions that capture everyone's imagination, and suddenly everyone's doing it. I think this is a sign of the Spirit, that these are, in fact, the small ways that we can transform our behaviors and make the world a much better place.
Well, and Sister Mary, we're hearing from a lot of people from a lot of different churches this hour. And honestly, when we went looking for this trend, it was something that we'd heard about anecdotally, but couldn't find a lot of evidence for, let's say, on the internet. But do you find that you are hearing about more and more churches in all different faiths getting
Absolutely.
More involved?
Yes, I do, because I think it's a key spiritual insight of giftedness. And that is trans-religion. I mean, that passes into all different denominations, Christian, non-Christian, Eastern, Western. It's the path of spiritual beauty that is nourishing the souls and the spirits of all people today.
Judy, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you, Judy.
Let's go now to Catherine on the line in Moline. Hi, Catherine.
Hello.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Well, I am a member of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of the Quad Cities located in Davenport. And within our denomination, one of our seven main principles is the respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. And also within our denomination, we have a program called the Green Sanctuary Program. And that is an accreditation by our denomination for churches who have really worked hard on becoming more environmentally aware and active by completing about 12 different projects. And we're very close to accomplishing that. And right now we're developing a garden from which the produce will go to a food kitchen that serves meals every day of the year. And we're very proud of that. But we've had a lot of educational programs. We've shown movies once a month for over 2 years with regard to the environment. And I heard someone mention Bagot, which is a great movie. But movies that are sobering as well as funny, like showing the gyres of plastic swirling around in all the oceans of our planet. And I'm just very proud of what our denomination is doing, both as individuals and families and as a member of the community. But I also feel that we need to work really hard on larger corporations in our society. And one of the things we've done is we're working on divesting from any fossil fuel investments that we have.
Well, thank you so much for calling and sharing that, Catherine. Before I let you go, was there a moment for you when you realized that this was something you wanted to dedicate a great deal of your time and energy to?
I really think it's been cumulative throughout my life. And I just, as a child, I fell in love with being outdoors, being hiking in the mountains or walking the prairies, wherever I was in love with that piece of earth. But as I've seen the greater degradation and lack of respect for our life support system, and I'm a nurse, so I really see the planet as what we depend on for living, and yet it's so often recognized as only a source for resources and making money. This just becomes heartbreaking, and one has to either fall into despair or become an activist, I think.
Well, Catherine, thank you so much for your call. And Sister Mary, it strikes me we've talked about your awakening in some sense, although this is something that's been important to you your whole life, but the moment at which you decided you needed to be more active, a lot of people have that moment. Again, as I mentioned before, I mean, sometimes you can feel a little bit hopeless when you think about all of these individual awakenings. Is this something that we have to move beyond? Is there a way to make this something that is just so much more a part of our culture and our churches and our lifestyle?
Well, I think one thing is doing exactly what you're doing, consecrating a whole hour to talking about this and getting these terrific ideas that are coming in from all these different groups. To know you're not alone is the key human experience of that turns us from abandonment to hope. And I think to promote more cross-church sharing, projects that churches get together on, interfaith action groups that can work together, it's building community around this beautiful, beautiful home that we have, the earth. And that, I think, can help live our way out of hope or out of despair. You can't think your way into hope. The hope doesn't just come if you sit long enough and wait for it. Action brings hope and provides the impetus for greater and greater good and greater love.
You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's one that is inspired by our conversation about plastic bags just a moment ago. This is from Joan, who says, our local natural food store, Everybody's Whole Foods in Fairfield, is no longer providing plastic bags. You can bring your own and get a credit or buy paper bags for 20 cents. Most stores probably couldn't get away with this, but I think Fairfield will support it. And that's a movement that we do see in many places around the country. This is from Lori, who says, my father, who was a Lutheran Christian, farmed in Audubon County and practiced terracing and waterways back in the 1960s before this was widely accepted, because he believed he was to treat the earth with respect and for the future. And this is an email from Nick in Chicago. He says, as a youth, I have very fond memories of Earth Day celebrations led by our Franciscan sisters in Dubuque. It blew my mind when we were instructed by our sisters to make every day Earth Day. In the 80s, it was not common to reuse, reduce, and recycle. At my elementary school, that did become more common, thanks entirely to the Franciscan sisters. As an adult, I learned how to be an activist from the Franciscans. It's something to witness poise, compassion, strength, and wisdom in the face of harsh, unbridled confrontations. I credit the Franciscans in forming much of my passion for justice, peace, and living a more simple, green life.
What a wonderful testimony.
As you are traveling around and talking to individuals, what is your goal? What are you hoping that people will take away from, for example, tonight's conversation and from the many conversations that you have around the country?
Well, what a great question. I think really it's a fairly simple goal or inspiration that guides me, and that is to be able to give an account of the hope within me. I think if we are people of hope and people of compassion, we have to be able to give an account. We have to be able to say why. Not just because I feel like doing it, but because there's something beyond my own actions. And these actions are my way of expressing my gratitude for the many gifts of my life and the graciousness that God has shown to me, and to share that with others and to discover that others are having the same type of experience, an experience of beauty in the created world, and a deep desire to respond to that beauty with beauty.
You have written about the Earth Charter, which is a movement, I believe, founded by the United Nations.
That's correct.
And this was really originated in around 2000.
Right.
You've also written about this Earth Charter in relationship to the Franciscan tradition and Franciscan teachings.
Yes.
Okay, this was 2000. It's 2014 today. There are a lot of people who've been working hard to protect our environment and to make changes, but things have been, in many ways, continuing just to get worse over that time. So if you look at the last 15 years, what do you see that you feel represents progress?
I would think probably more than anything else, the dramatic consciousness of so many of this moment in history, and that there are concrete things we can do in our lives, small lives, small actions that have an impact.
Is there something from your research about St. Francis that you particularly want people to know, that you really, really feel strongly about sharing?
Okay. It's not so much St. Francis, but it would be from Duns Scotus. And this is something that is often asked of me by young people. And that's the famous line, "Will my dog go to heaven? Will I see my dog in heaven?" And so one of the great things about Scotus as a Franciscan is he says absolutely all animals will. Well, it's not so much that they'll go to heaven. They're already in heaven, because heaven is the fullest experience of God of which a being is capable. And so all of nature, all of the animal kingdom is already experiencing God to the fullest extent. We're the ones that are not quite there yet. And so in a very Franciscan way, the insight has to do with the fact that as Jesus says, the kingdom of heaven is here and it's also coming. So it's an already but a not yet. And so as we pray in my tradition, we wait in joyful hope for the fullest revelation of the kingdom of God.
That sounds like you're saying that the understanding, the cognition of a belief in God isn't necessary to experience God's joy in its fullest.
That's right. That's right. Because it's all about love.
Sister Mary, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you.
Sister Mary Beth Ingham is Professor Emeritus of Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles. She will be speaking at Iowa State University tonight at 7 p.m. in the Sunroom of the Memorial Union. That talk is free and open to the public again tonight at 7 o'clock. Tomorrow on Talk of Iowa, wildlife biologist Jim Pease will be here. We will talk about the sounds of spring and now that spring has finally sprung in Iowa. So we'll talk about birdsong and toads and frogs and all sorts of other creatures who are out there making a lot of noise about spring. So please join us for our conversation tomorrow. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Ben Stanton, Emily Woodbury, and Sarah Bowden. Our executive director is Catherine Perkins. You can send us email anytime. We'd love to have your input on things you've heard on the show, things you'd like to hear on the show. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was written and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.